Ways and Means Committee, the Subcommittee on Public Safety, for Thursday, April 14th, 2005. This is a public hearing on House Bill 5051, the Oregon Military Department. And we're going to begin with a presentation from Susie Jordan, Legislative Fiscal Office, and then we'll get into an overview of the department and budget detail, and follow that with a presentation on the governor's recommended budget. Ms. Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to call your attention to a memo that I put at your place. It's just a overview of the agency's budget and a little bit about their history, revenue history, and the size of their budget. The agency and DAS are going to go through that in more detail, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that, but I just wanted to direct your attention to the third page, which I lists out the various areas that the agency appeared before the emergency board during the interim, and most of the items on that list were for capital construction items. And there was one audit, and a management letter was issued on buildings and building improvement. There were no reportable conditions. And on their capital asset reconciliation, there was a recommendation for more frequent reviews. And also at your place is a copy of the agency's notebook binder that they'll be going through today, the DAS presentation, and then the work session materials that we'll be going through on Monday, so you have some time to look them over. With that, I will turn it over to the department.
Very good. Please come forward. And let me just explain what is happening here with the committee. On the Senate side, Senator Devlin is traveling out of the state. Senator Winters, as you all know, is still recovering and doing very well after her triple bypass, but she's just doing partial days. With that said, she's also following very closely all of the public safety hearings and receives all of the materials that this committee receives. So she's very well abreast of what we're talking about down here. On the House side, to my knowledge, we should be seeing our other two representatives, Hannah and Hansen, shortly. And we apologize to the agency that we are starting without a quorum and a full complement of our members, but please bear with us.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, certainly at your disposal for whatever the business of this body requires, we certainly understand that. For the record, my name is Colonel Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director at the Oregon Military Department. With me today is our Financial Administrator, Mr. Carl Jorgensen, Master Sergeant retired, Oregon National Guard, and Satish Ipadia, who is with the Department of Administrative Services. I don't know if you want to proceed in any, I guess there is an order. I better look at the order, hadn't I? My problem. Unless you want to go first, Satish, I'll start off. Okay.
Please go forward.
All right. Today, our objective is to provide you an overview of our organization. We've set up some high-tech slides. If you recall, in past years, we would drag in about two trees worth of big poster board to show you these things. Well, we've moved into the technological breakthrough age, and now we're putting it on the wall.
Are we following in this notebook?
Yes, ma'am.
Is this the one? Okay. Thank you.
So my objective is to provide you an overview of our organization, an explanation of our programs and their significance, and the performance measures that guide our service to Oregonians. First insert in your binders are the basic presentation outlines that I will follow today and for the next scheduled presentation. The mission of the Oregon National Guard is to provide the citizens of the state of Oregon and of the United States with a ready force of citizen soldiers and airmen equipped and trained to respond to any contingency, natural or man-made. When we are needed, we are there, is our motto. The National Guard is the governor's largest available organization, trained force for disaster response. protection of life and property, suppression of civil disorder, and support of law enforcement. The governor may call the Oregon National Guard to act in state status at his direction. This places our soldiers and airmen and over $2.5 billion in facilities and federal equipment assigned to the Oregon National Guard at the governor's disposal. The National Guard not only stands as a ready force in support of the governor during unrest and natural disaster, but also serves as a reserve force, United States Air Force, and the United States Army, which, as we get on later, later in the presentation, you'll see how that has been operating since the last time we got together. Unlike most of the state agencies that come before the legislature, the National Guard is part of both the U.S. Constitution and the Oregon Constitution. Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution and the powers of Congress in part states, quote, to provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrection, and repel invasion, end quote. It goes on to further, quote, to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, and for governing such parts of them as may be employed in the service of the United States, reserving to the states respectively the appointment of the officers and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress, end of quote. This is a unique situation, as no other country in the world has this sort of military operation. It's formed by the Founding Fathers in an effort to balance the power between the federal government and the state government. Article 10, Section 1 of the Oregon Constitution states, in part, quote, the Legislative Assembly shall provide by law for the organization, maintenance, and discipline of the state militia for defense and protection of the state, end quote. The federal Constitution also says that the Congress has the power to provide and maintain a Navy. In fact, the militia, the forerunner of the modern-day National Guard, was the principal group of Americans responsible for defending the nation, except for the Navy. One could clearly argue that the Founding Fathers didn't want a large standing army, and that when and if one was needed, we will raise the army from the militia, as is stated in the Constitution. Prior to the end of World War II, this nation maintained a small standing army, and when the nation went to war, they called the militia to man the ranks of the army to fight our wars. In other words, they raised the army from the militia. The Cold War, post-World War II, was the first time in our history that we did not shrink our standing army after a conflict. The Guard was realigned into a deep reserve force and was only envisioned to mobilize and deploy in the event of a major global conflict or a World War III. After the Cold War ended, the United States Army did shrink by 6 combat divisions, from 16 to 10. Today, we, the National Guard, have been called for deployment around the world. The Oregon National Guard has deployed over 67% of our total force since 2001. Keeping our military strength at high levels through recruiting and retention is a constant and important challenge for us. Equally important and challenging is maintaining our infrastructure. The facilities that allow us to assemble, train, and maintain our forces, to assemble, train, and maintain their equipment. These same facilities provide the state of Oregon a statewide network of community resource centers in times of need. Our key goals, our central emphasis on fulfilling our mission and commitment to the state of Oregon, depends on meeting our first goal to assure a ready, trained force for rapid response in support of the national authority or for statewide emergencies. Our second goal is to maintain our community-based armories and other facilities in an adequate level of repair to enhance community support and readiness for emergency response. Keeping a trained force at the ready requires facilities for the military units to be able to assemble and place them, to train and maintain their equipment. These same facilities become community centers able to provide local support in times of need. Our responsibility in this unique state and federal partnership is to administer and house the National Guard of the state of Oregon. In exchange, the federal government pays 94% of the cost for training and equipment. The general fund pays 4%, and we earn other funds making up the remaining 2% of our total budget. The Oregon National Guard is approximately 89% of its authorized strength of 9,108 personnel, with the current strength of 8,071. Attracting and retaining quality Oregonians is our highest priority. Oregon National Guard soldiers and airmen provided airport security at seven airports around the state following September 11, 2001.
Colonel, may I stop you just for a moment?
Yes, ma'am.
Could you back up and go over those numbers again?
Yes, ma'am.
Please.
And I have some charts that are coming up later that you'll be able to see more graphically.
I want to make sure that I capture.
I'm not sure where we are. Which book, Madam Chair?
We're in the small book.
We're not.
On page four.
The Colonel is giving us some information and statistical information that isn't captured yet in the pages before us. But please continue.
What I mentioned earlier, do you want the cost or do you want the personnel?
The personnel.
Okay.
Yes.
We're presently 89% of our authorized strength. Our authorized strength is 9,108 people, and we currently have a strength of 8,071. I would, and you'll see on the charts, traditionally, we've been a little bit higher than that, but we've had obvious reasons for that to be dropping right now. So.
And just to give you a heads up, Colonel, later in your presentation, if you could relate that current authorized strength to your first goal, which is to assure a ready trained force for rapid response to statewide emergencies. In other words, how ready are we and will we be in the case of some unnatural disaster, et cetera?
I know that's on a lot of people's minds these days, and we certainly can't address that.
All right. Thank you.
As I said, after September 11th, anybody in the military system, whether they be Guard or Reserve, in our case the Guard, our world changed dramatically. Since that time, we have been deployed on airport security duty in the state. We provided security for the Winter Olympics in Salt Lake City. Our 142nd Fighter Fighter Wing was deployed as a combat air patrol from the Canadian border to south of the Oregon border for over almost a year. The 116th designation?
Air Traffic Squadron.
Air Traffic Control Squadron out of Camp Rialia was deployed for over a year on federal active duty from Oregon to Washington to Wyoming, and parts of them and pieces of them went global. They were picked apart and sent globally. So our world has changed dramatically since September 11th, and we've experienced the largest federal mobilization since World War II, and 67% of our total force has been mobilized since September 11th, at home and abroad. That mobilization, that pressure, those length of mobilizations has caused a decline in our membership, and We are trying to assess the impacts of those currently. We're just getting data back from units that were deployed for 18 months. They have just returned over the last 6 or 7 months, and we're starting to try to assess the data. We're doing everything we can do to possibly keep these people interested in the Guard. But the reality is that we're seeing some large numbers of people not reenlisting. We're committed to maintaining the force, and that we need to accomplish our mission and provide a positive economic impact to Oregon. As I stated earlier, 94% of the Guard's federal cost. So as Guard membership increases, we actually have more job growth in the state, and the state collects more taxes. Soldiers and airmen compensated, their federal duties compensated with 100% of federal funds through the military pay and benefits system, unless they are called to state active duty by the governor. The federal government pays 100%. We estimate that the average traditional National Guard soldier and airman receives approximately $5,836 annually if they're not deployed or called up for federal military use. And that includes their monthly drills and their annual training period. This is in addition to what our traditional serving soldiers and airmen earn in their civilian jobs. So it's an additional benefit to them or additional income. Other residual economic contributions support our military units during their monthly and annual training periods. Our soldiers and airmen are provided meals from food purchases made locally. Our soldiers and airmen train with their equipment, vehicles, and aircraft, requiring the purchase of fuels, lubricants, and other items from local vendors. We also purchase other goods and services in operations. They reach into the millions of dollars that are not in our state budget. They're in the federal budget. The Oregon National Guard has a long tradition and history dating back to 1843 in this state. The tradition and history of the Oregon Guard was grounded on the basis of its mission statement, ready force, equipped and trained to respond to any contingency. When we're needed, we're there. Much can be said about the Oregon National Guard's service during territorial times, Spanish-American War, World War I, World War II, and the current conflicts, Korea, Vietnam, and the current conflicts. Recent federal activations and mobilizations of the Oregon National Guard are making history right now, and we're witnessing that. All three of the infantry battalions of our 41st Brigade Infantry Brigade, have been activated by national authority and have been mobilized overseas since September 11th. 1st Battalion, 186th Infantry, headquartered in Forest Grove, 186th, headquartered in Ashland, deployed to the Sinai as part of a multinational force for an observer mission. 1st Battalion, 162nd Infantry, from headquartered in Forest Grove, deployed for Operation Iraqi Freedom and provided force protection and missions including port security in Kuwait, base security in Saudi Arabia, and convoy escorts into Baghdad, Iraq. The 2nd Battalion, 162nd Infantry, just returned from serving in Iraq. According to Major General Peter Chiarelli, commanding general of the Army's 1st Cavalry Division, which this unit was assigned to, this unit was known as one of the top two battalions in that entire division, active and guard. They were the only guard unit. The rest of them were active. This distinguished unit performed its missions in some of Iraq's most difficult areas to include eastern Baghdad, Baghdad's Sadr city, and Taji. Elements of this battalion also fought in Najaf, Fallujah, as part of the 1st Cavalry Division's 2nd Battalion of the 7th Cavalry Regiment. 95 soldiers of this battalion also mobilized with the unit that went to the Sinai the year prior. The battalion suffered 8 combat fatalities and experienced 51 soldiers wounded in action. Sergeant Matthew Zedwick from Bend, Oregon, received a Silver Star for his heroic actions during one attack last June. Other Oregon National Guard military units and elements have been federally activated and mobilized to Afghanistan, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, Bosnia, Cuba, and various locations within the United States since September 11th. Currently, the 3rd Battalion, 116th Cavalry, who's part of the 116th Cavalry Brigade out of Idaho, which this unit's headquartered in LeGrand, with units predominantly in eastern Oregon. Troop G out of Redmond are serving in northern Iraq, northwestern Iraq, in Kirkuk. I'm not good at my Arabic today, I'm sorry. It arrived in time to perform security missions in support of the Iraqi national elections. To date, the unit has experienced 1 combat-related injury and 1 non-combat-related death. The Oregon Guard is 1186 Military Police Company from Salem and Milton Freewater are currently in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And they're approaching the end of their service and will be returning their year deployment and will be returning shortly. We experience these units coming home, as I said earlier. We also have our cargo airplane company, Chinook Helicopter Maintenance Detachment, a cavalry troop from the 82nd Cavalry out of Lebanon, maintenance unit out of Clackamas are all activated in federal service in Iraq today. Our Chinook Helicopter Flight Detachment based in Pendleton has been activated and is currently serving in Afghanistan. This unit in Pendleton is a significant play to what you mentioned earlier, Madam Chairman, is that we've used that unit extensively during forest fire season because of their capability to haul heavy loads. It's a twin-engine, two-bladed helicopter that hauls lots of water, and we use it extensively during fire season. All those helicopters are gone, so we don't have them here this year. The Salem-based 1042nd Military or Medical Ambulance Company has completed a deployment in Afghanistan, Kuwait, and Saudi Arabia, and Iraq. The 82nd Rear Operations Center out of Portland performed base operations near Balad, Iraq, and they were a small unit that basically were the city infrastructure, if you will. Their job was to be the mayor and the city government of that operation in northern Iraq, and they were in there for a year just after Saddam fell. and an engineer company, Bravo 52nd Engineers out of Albany, combat engineer construction unit, returned from duty in Mosul, Iraq, in the last year as well. Bravo 52nd Engineers experienced a non-combat related death of one soldier, a student out of Oregon State University, 19-year-old boy who was killed when his 5-ton truck was involved in a rollover accident. The 641st Medical Battalion and the 1249th Engineer Battalion, all out of Salem, have completed federal activation tours within the last year. Each one of them did for a year since the legislature met last. The Oregon Air National Guard continues to patrol the skies over western United States and is an integral part of the North American Air Defense Command. The Oregon National Guard also trains the United States Air Force and occasionally foreign flight crews in combat and aerial techniques. Many elements and personnel assigned to the Oregon National Guard have and continue to perform tactical operations in communications, engineering, medical security, administration missions throughout the world. Here at home, the Oregon Guard has highly trained personnel and emergency equipment provided by the federal government, located throughout the state and available in response to natural disasters, homeland defense, or civil unrest. Our assistance during the devastating floods of 1996 and the wildland fires of 2002 is a very good example of how the Guard serves its state. The governor ordered over 1,462 National Guard members into duty to suppress forest fires in 2002. Guard personnel conducted sustained operations, with 40% of the mobilized citizen soldiers serving as many as 51 continuous days of state active duty. Our helicopters placed millions of gallons of water in forest fires. We also provided cargo trucks, transportation vehicles, mobile kitchen trailers, tanker trucks, and communications links in an effort to suppress the wildland fires and assist the Forest Service. Other examples of our service to the state include providing assistance during windstorms and floods, 95, 96, 97, 97, or 99, 2000, 2001, and 2003. As I said earlier, the Oregon National Guard is under the command of the governor. He's our commander-in-chief. We have a combined authorized federal military strength, as I said earlier, 9,108, and 8,071 people on board today. We'll go into greater detail later and show how the full-time support breaks down in the funding categories. This is the basic organizational chart of the Oregon National Guard. The governor's budget will not result in any operational changes to our organizational structure. Starting on your left of the chart is our largest Army unit, as I mentioned earlier, the 41st Separate Infantry Brigade. The remainder of the brigade that hasn't already deployed, the majority of them have deployed to Iraq. The remainder of those will be deploying in March of 2006 to Afghanistan to train the Iraqi or the Afghani National Army. And that will be another 18-month deployment.
And when do they?
March of 2006. So they're scheduled to go there now. They have, currently there's a contingent, a small group of 41st Brigade members that are in Afghanistan today, and they're going to bring those lessons learned back, and then over this next year they will train up the brigade, and then in March of 2006 they will deploy. That's the current plan. That 41st Brigade has authorized over 3,700 personnel. Next on the chart is the 82nd Troop Command Brigade. The 82nd Brigade has authorized over 2,500 personnel. Next on the chart, as you'll see, the Joint Forces Headquarters. It has authorized over 700 personnel and provides administrative support to the Oregon Guard units. The unit consists primarily of our headquarters here in Salem and provides oversight of this command headquarters. As I said early on, as Oregon's responsibility in this partnership is for command and control, administer and house the Oregon National Guard. Next is the Air National Guard. The Air National Guard has authorized 2,189 total personnel and includes 8 units. The Air Guard also has a large number of federally reimbursed state employees to support various programs within the Air Guard. Next is the Oregon State Defense Force. This is the true volunteer militia of approximately 200 soldiers who respond to 2 defined missions. First mission is in time of war emergency, when the Oregon National Guard has been called up in federal capacity under full mobilization. The State Defense Force will replace the Oregon Guard and maintain the armories and be the governor's militia. Second mission, in time of peace, requires the Oregon State Defense Force to provide volunteer assistance to the National Guard communities during state emergencies and act as liaisons with county emergency managers. Oregon State Defense Force volunteers meet monthly throughout the state in our armories and also train collectively approximately 6 days per year. These folks are not paid. They're true volunteers. Next is the general staff. These positions support the Adjutant General directly and also our military units. On the right side of the chart are the state programs. As Deputy Director, I provide the oversight of our state programs. State programs are critical to the operation of the Oregon National Guard. The federal government funds the training and equipment of our forces as part of the Guard's National Defense Mission. The training, organization, and equipment are all provided by the federal government. These are valuable assets to the governor and to the citizens, we believe. In return, Oregon is responsible for funding a small portion of the command and administration of the Guard. The state must also provide and maintain facilities to house the Oregon National Guard. Our governor's general fund budget is 4% of the total Oregon National Guard budget. This 4% is essential. The Oregon National Guard's federal-state partnership provides many benefits for Oregon.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Colonel, if I could ask just one question, just kind of set things in my mind. When we have as many troops on active duty and in foreign assignments as we have now, do a lot of how does the command work, or how do we still do payroll for them in the state of Oregon? Are there functions that we're still providing, or is that all handled overseas?
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, the way the system works is that when you join the National Guard, you join two National Guards. You join the National Guard of the state that you're in, and you join the National Guard of the United States. And that's the federal nexus to provide the equipment, provide the money, pay the training, etc. And that also is the nexus where they pay all the time during what we call Title 32 U.S. Code, Title 32 status, which means we're under the control of the governor. The federal government's paying the bills, but we're under the control of the governor. And the president, who has authority from Congress to call up at certain levels, certain numbers of Guard and reservists, when the president makes that determination, and the Congress allows him to do that, then our folks change from a Title 32, U.S. Code Title 32 status, they go on federal active duty Title 10. At that point, we cut all ties, basically, with those people. They no longer belong to us. They're no longer under the command of the governor or the adjutant general, nor are they paid by us through the Title 32 Guard system. They shift into the Title 10 system, and they are paid and compensated under the Title 10 system.
Okay, so you have virtually no administrative problems with them or functions other than...
Senator Gorley, Representative Hansen, I'd love to tell you that's the truth, but it isn't. The fact of the matter is we still have a database on them. The fact of the matter is their families are still here. The fact of the matter is that we have to do certain things for promotions. They can't be promoted on active duty. We have to do that. They got to send it back through us. So there is a back and forth operation that has to occur. Now, is it immense? No, it isn't. Totally overwhelming. I wouldn't suggest that, because their day-to-day pay needs and benefits are all being handled, on the active duty status. But we can't. The active duty will not promote any of our folks. If there's a slot that opens up that the individual is qualified, we have to actually do the order here in Salem and ship it back. What we have done to kind of bridge this, and I'll be honest with you, a lot of these things were never worked out in theory until this mobilization began. And initially the active duty folks said, well, we're going to leave you one person back basically to answer the phones. And we said, that's crazy. You can't operate that way. So now we've evolved into a situation where we have a rear detachment. They're actually on federal Title 10. They're actually paid by the federal government. But they are handling that, and it's not immense. It's 5, 6, 7 people that are handling all that day-to-day activity, because it still continues on. The work doesn't quit. It's not as robust as it was before, but it's still there's work to do. So that's the solution that we've evolved to. It's not a perfect system. It's not a perfect solution. And I think you're going to see, as we keep evolving, I think you will see the Army, in our case, and the Air Guard is a little less pronounced. They have a better system, frankly. They look at their people in total instead of two separates. But I think you'll see it evolve, and it will be better. That answers your question, sir.
Very well.
Okay. We're going to ask regards to federal-state partnership, as we said, is a 94% federal partner. This equates to approximately $419 million per biennium, most of which is not reflected, as I said, in our budget. Of the remaining 6%, 4% is general fund, 2% other funds, primarily, like I said, from Army Rentals. Of the general fund share, this is primarily used to operate and maintain our 39 armories located throughout Oregon and provide minimum matching funds for the maintenance and repair of our Army logistics facility and Air Guard bases. The majority of the funding is to construct and maintain our other federal facilities. Other federal facilities is provided by the federal government, the majority of that funding. This chart shows our budget structure. Our budget is organized in three major programs: the administrative program, operations program, community support program. This chart demonstrates how the state funds are utilized. State funds are used to match federal participation in 16 state and federal cooperative agreements we administer, which primarily supports operations and facilities maintenance. The cooperative agreement also create 443 state employee positions to maintain facilities, equipment, provide security and protection, and work with our at-use risk programs and our youth challenge program.
Kermit?
Yes, ma'am.
If I may interrupt for a moment, how are Homeland Security funds accounted for in that pie?
Madam Chairman, where would they fall, you mean?
Yes.
Madam Chairman, we're not a direct recipient of Homeland Security funds. We'd be akin to more like one of the counties, where we would need to, you know, go. We sit on the committee, I'll grant you that, and we're partnerships with the Homeland Security Office, but we don't get direct funding from Homeland Security dollars. We have received some of the Homeland Security money, and it's been primarily for construction issues on the Armed Forces Reserve Center on State Street for security. And we've made requests to the committee, and we've received some actual Homeland Security money. We don't get any Homeland Security money specifically for something other than the civil support team that we have, which is 100% funded through the National Guard Bureau, not through the Homeland Security Office. It's 22 members of a civil support team that was established 1 year ago. They're in training. It takes 24 months to train them. Most of their equipment is here, and they're designed to go out and support local law enforcement and first responders, and they do nuclear, biological, and chemical detection and also response. And a statewide element, specifically designed on the weapons of mass destruction model, but that still doesn't come out of the Homeland Security budget at the federal level. It comes through the Guard Bureau.
Going back to the slide on page 7 and looking at that organizational chart in the fifth column, where you have listed the Oregon State Defense Force.
Yes, ma'am.
Commander and the other box under that. Are those functions tied to Homeland Security?
Madam Chairman, make sure I'm in the right spot here. Right here, okay. Oregon State Defense Force. Yes, ma'am. The State Defense Force, as I said earlier in the testimony, we have two purposes for the State Defense Force. One, it's all volunteer. They're members of what I said earlier about the Oregon Guard and the Oregon Guard of the United, or the National Guard of the United States. So they are strictly in the National Guard of Oregon. So we can't put federal money that we get through the Bureau to them. It's not allowed. So what their role is, their primary role is if the Guard was under full mobilization in a World War III scenario and nobody was left in the state of Oregon, all units were deployed, These would be an augmentation back into the local communities to maintain our facilities, maintain the armories, keep them up, and also be a response to the governor if he had needed a need for natural disasters, insurrection, something of that nature.
So
the most important mission they do, however, right now, and the mission that we're training them for, is to liaison between the counties, county emergency managers, and us. Our people move. Our commanders move. Our full-time people, we move them, rotate them around. And this gives us consistency in the towns and places where we have armories. So they're always constantly focusing on that emergency manager, where our commanders, frankly, are focusing on their federal mission. That's what they train for. That's what they're paid to train for. So we've established this program in order to, one, have available to the local commander somebody who's knowledgeable, familiar with the operations of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, and has that liaison consistent, knows the players. Mm-hmm. So that's why we've established it.
The other question, given what you said earlier about the number of folks who are mobilized and in other places in the world, and given what you also said about the helicopters being gone, what is the backup plan in the case of forest fires? Do you look to this Oregon State Defense Force and that unit of volunteers for your backup, or what does that piece look like?
Madam Chairman, most generally we would not. One is not big enough, it's not large enough. They're cadre strength. We keep them at cadre strength. Just a shell, if you will. Their job is mainly intellectual. They would help, I'm sure, but they're not going to be based on typically what we find in our State Defense Force or people about my age who retire out of the Guard and go into that. So we're not your best bet out on the fire line at this stage of our life, so that's kind of the typical SDF person. I would tell you that your question, clearly we've lost some capability. There's no question about that with our mobilizations. But currently, right now, the number of deployed National Guardsmen is roughly about 1,000, 1,100, I think, right now, right?
Yes, sir.
Around 1,100 people. So if you look at the 8,000 we have available, we take 1,000, 1,200 of them out. You take another 700 of them out of the mix because they just got back, and they get 90 days before we can even touch them. They're still on federal active duty burning up leave. So we've still got a pretty good supply of individuals and equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are some, I mean, we're probably at 75% of our capability on a normal day, which isn't bad. The big issue that we have right now is that pretty much everything east of the Cascades is deployed. We've deployed almost everything, with the exception of Klamath Falls and the air base. We've deployed every unit there, and they're gone. So will we be there as quickly? Probably not. I think the reality is we're going, and we've thought that process through in our trigger process. We're working with the BLM, U.S. Forest Service, and Department of Forestry, making them knowledgeable of the fact that we're not going to be as quick as we normally can be. So we're going to need a little more lead time. We're typically the last ones in and the first ones out anyway. So we're, you know, after everybody else is expended and they cannot meet the need, then they come to us. Now, from the aviation standpoint, we're prohibited by federal law from competing with private contractors. Again, if they can't do the mission, we'll come in. If there's nobody left, and then when they're robusted back up, we withdraw because we can't compete with them.
Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Colonel Caldwell, so we've got 8,000 assigned, 1,200 deployed, 700 on R&R. Are any in the pipeline now and to deploy? And two follow-ons. So, and what's, you know, the total number deployed, I know, is about a 6-month training period before they went over. Is that shortened once they go back? And I guess then the follow-on to help the Madam Chair is, what's the most number of guard people we've used in a fire season?
Madam Chair, Representative Wisnant, great questions. right now, if you, we do not have any projections of any significant deployments until March of next year. And that is a significant deployment. That'll probably be around 1,200 soldiers. So, however, 3116, the unit in Eastern Oregon, Air Battalion 116 Cavalry, should return in November. So we're kind of got some coming back, got some leaving, so I think we're going to stay relatively about the same. The most that we've ever had on any state active duty situation for forest firefighting was, I believe, 2,100 total, and at one time only 1,100 of those, that's total fire season, we called 2,400 people up, separate people. And the most at any one time was like 1,100. That kind of gives you the scheme of things. And that was during the Biscuit Fire and the B&B Fire over in your neck of the woods. And we deployed aircraft on both of those. We did fly missions on the B&B Fire. When civilian contractors, we flew for about 4 or 5 days. And then civilian folks moved in because they got released from other fire duty from other states. Then we moved out, and before we could get home, they redispatched us from there down to the Biscuit Fire in Roseburg, Medford, in that country, Rogue River country. We arrived, but we never flew any missions. We stayed for 3 days.
All out mm-hmm. Thank you for that, Colonel. And I, so then, would you, on your professional expertise, you think that we're okay unless there's a disastrous, I mean, we have enough troops that we could assist in firefighting at the same level we've experienced in the past?
Madam Chair, Representative Wisnot, I believe that we're in excellent shape. As I stated earlier, we're not going to fool anybody. We're not going to be, we don't have enough soldiers in Eastern Oregon where we can come out and react in 24, 48 hours. It's not going to happen. And that's why we're working so diligently with the Oregon Department of Forestry to make sure that the trigger times are set at the proper place. And as you well know, these situations, you can see them kind of building. We've got to do a train-up. We've got to do 3 days of training anyway, safety issues. And so we will probably do that earlier than normal. And we'll probably, if we see the situation, we may be, just for that very reason, not being able to get there quickly, we may have people trained up a lot earlier than normal.
Madam Chair, and I'm not an expert in this, but I think what the Colonel has said is a key thing is that U.S. Forest Service and Oregon Department of Forestry, the key to them is that sometimes they want to try to fight it with themselves. So they, some way they need to learn that in this situation, what the Colonel explained is they're going to have to make a decision if they need help earlier. And that even goes to, like, hiring contract crews before they hesitate sometime on doing that before they hire the contract crews, and then the Guard is the backup to that, so... So it's, I'm sure I'll get a chance to talk to Forrester Brown and be sure that he realizes that he's got to make that decision. I'm sure that the guards talk to the Forrester Brown about that.
Madam Chairman, Representative, indeed, we have had numerous meetings with Oregon Department of Forestry at this point. We have recognized this need and that we're going to have to train up earlier. The other significant change from normal for us is that we've shifted our focus because the Army Guard is getting a little tired. Is we've shifted over to the Air Guard, and we've said, you guys are going to be the first 350 people that we send out. Most of them have never gone through the training, and so therefore we're going to have to train them earlier if we're going to be responsive in a decent manner.
Madam Chair.
What, yes.
Colonel Caldwell, the Air Guard people, are they? Do we have security police, or are they just the support for the aircraft? Do we have security police? So that's one we'd be probably deploying.
Yes, we have... Excuse me, Madam Chair, Representative Wisnot. We have, I'm going to talk to the former commander of all those units, Colonel Frey. How many ground units do you have, Dave?
Four.
One up here.
Looks like seven.
Colonel Frey's unit would have to remain there to
sir, could I ask you to pull a chair up and swing that microphone around? We want to be sure to get you identified on the record. Comments on the record as well.
70 here.
Madam Chair, for the record, Colonel Dave Foray with the Oregon Air National Guard.
Good afternoon.
Yes, thank you, ma'am. There are security forces at both Klamath Falls and Portland. The unit at Klamath Falls is assigned only to Klamath Falls. They don't have another mission other than Klamath Falls, so they would have to remain there. The unit at Portland is a security forces squadron that is deployable. They do deploy overseas frequently, but they have enough personnel there to defend the Portland Air Base and also deploy a portion of their forces.
What about your other ground units?
Well, there are a number of other ground units located up there. There are combat communications units, a combat operations group, and some of those type of units. Civil engineering squadron is quite large, and all those people would be available. So it is a full-up fighter wing with over 1,000 personnel.
Thank you very much, Representative. You've taken the questioning just in the area that I hoped you would. Thank you. And, Colonel, would you like to go back to page 10?
Yes, ma'am. Again, as the Military Department's general fund appropriation is used for matching federal funds, the federal participation in 16 state and federal cooperative agreements and funds are used to operate the Oregon National Guard, which we match $25 to Oregon National Guard matches $25 to every state general fund dollar expended through these federal agreements. This 25-to-1 agreement creates jobs in Oregon, increases personal spending, capital, and state tax revenue. In addition to the 8,071 soldiers and airmen that we manage, we manage a full-time state and federal workforce of 2,238 full-time personnel. This chart that you see up there on the wall now reflects the governor's recommended budget, state positions, and federal positions for the agency. As you can see, the federal government funds most of our full-time employees. The 1,772 federal employees reflected on this chart in yellow are paid directly by the federal government, but are under the direction of the Adjutant General. As a member of the Oregon National Guard, they have to have their guard job in order to hold those positions. The next group of 421 employees, indicated in the blue, includes state employees funded through the federal-state agreements. The federal government provides the funding for these positions. The state is required to match some positions, mostly in the Air Guard. The state match varies between 15% and 40%. The smallest group on this chart, the least one, is 45 employees indicated in red. They are 100% state general fund funded positions. As you can see, out of the 2,238, only 45 of those are paid for by the state, or less than 2% of the full-time workforce, are general funded employees. Since the 1991 session, the department's general funded employees have been reduced from the 20-year-old average high of 101 to the current number. Generally, we've been able to shift the duties to the federal positions indicated in yellow, or to the blue category, which are state employees funded from a mix of federal and state dollars. Or we simply don't do the function any longer. That is not to say that we are able to meet all of our requirements in the most efficient or timely manner. The continuous reduction in personnel resources over the last 12 years has caused some activities to not get accomplished in the manner which we would prefer. But we've been under tight budgets, as you all know. Audits have consistently commented on the agency's needing a position to monitor property assets. We would agree. However, we are not now or have been in a position to add a 100% general funded position to do that task. By conscious choice, we've chose to leverage each general fund dollar to its maximum capacity. The federal government does not provide the flexibility required to make this program 100% federally supported, and does not allow for the activity of inside of any of our agreements. So as I said earlier, there's just some things we don't do. The condition of our facilities continues to decline due to a lack of basic maintenance as a direct result of position reductions and service and supply dollars. Further degradation or any acute catastrophic failure to facility structures or mechanical systems will cause us to seek emergency board funds for that repair, which we have been doing over the past several years. The administration program assists the command group in the management of the agency. The command group provides senior-level leadership, administration, and management of the Oregon National Guard. The command group includes the Office of the Adjutant General, which has dual responsibilities as both the Adjutant General of the Oregon National Guard and the Director of the Oregon Military Department. The command group also includes senior leaders and advisors, which form the Joint Forces Headquarters, a and the Deputy Director of the Military Department, my position. Our Direct Administrative Support Staff is also part of the Command Group. The Financial Administration's Division, State Personnel Office, and Public Affairs Office are the primary programs that assist the Command Group. The Financial Administration's Division provides fiscal management and oversight of the state agency's budget and the federal agreement budgets. The division develops, monitors, and enforces agency fiscal and internal control systems, coordinates and prepares agency budgets, accounts for agency, state, and federal funds, manages agency information systems, performs agency risk management coordination, and accounts for the agency's high-dollar property items. The division also coordinates grants, federal state cooperative agreements, contracts, purchasing, and other agreements. The director of this division also provides management oversight for the six smaller programs. State Personnel Office is responsible for human resource management, labor relations activities, and payroll for state employees. I would venture to say that most people don't know that we have two firefighter unions in the Oregon National Guard, one at Klamath Falls and one at Portland. And we have, and those are civilian operations paid for by the federal government, so we do negotiations for both of those, so they're two separate contracts, as well as our state employees who are not military. They are in a union as well. This office provides technical assistance to our managers, supervisors, and bargaining unit employees in support of our effort to maintain a high-performance workforce. The office reviews managers, supervisors' actions to ensure compliance with personnel rules and collective bargaining agreements. Also determines and recommends actions in disciplinary matters, grievance resolutions, and other state personnel matters. Public Affairs Office manages our public relations activities. The program is a vital link between the public and the National Guard. The program is responsible for disseminating command information to the public concerning activities of the Oregon National Guard, responding to requests for information from the public and the private sector, and providing information to active and retired members of the Oregon National Guard. This program prepares and distributes an agency newsletter, prepares video productions, manages a volunteer community service program, and a marketing section. Coordination of community support requests is centralized in the Public Affairs Office to ensure all state and federal regulatory requirements are adhered to in the dispatch of our personnel and equipment. Our community service activities average over 230,000 man-hours of volunteer support to local communities each biennium. We have, if I'm going to break from tradition here and probably surprise Susie, but I'd like to show just a minute or two of a video that this office produces. We do it in-house. We have a mobile public affairs detachment on weekends that drills. And if we could, I'd like to show you just a little bit of what we put out. And we call this our year in review tape. And anytime you raise your hand, I will shut it off. How's that? I'll shut that off, too. That's the lead-in. If you want to watch the whole thing, I'll forgive you each one, or we'll take the time and do it. But it's basically this mobile public affairs detachment has the capability, the equipment provided by the federal government, and they go out and they shoot this film. They put it together, and they put together an annual CD now. We used to do the cassettes, I guess they call them. And now we can do it on CD, and we can do it all electronics, all digitized. And there is one full-time federal employee who handles all of our video and all of our video, radio, and communication stuff. And he also helps put out the newspaper that we put out every quarter.
How long does that video run?
It's about 10 minutes.
11 minutes.
Okay.
Could you make sure that that is delivered to our offices?
Yes, ma'am. We'll get you a copy, each one of you a copy.
Representative? Thank you, Madam Chair. Colonel Caldwell, does the National Guard take care of recruitment, or do you supplement, or does your office work with them on recruitment, or how does recruitment...
Madam Chair, Representative, wasn't it? The recruiting, we have a recruiting force internally. As far as the...
Oregon National Guard does?
Yes, sir, we do. And I don't have off the top of my head how many are in that, but we'll get you that number. We just got authorization to increase that. Could be maybe the 30% reduction in recruits here lately that spurred the Guard Bureau to allow us to increase our numbers, which we're in the process of doing. The command is basically distributed throughout the state, as you might expect, where we have facilities. All that is federal supported. Any advertising dollars that are expended are done through a national contract. We have some input as to how they're done, but we don't have a great deal. We have public service announcements that are again manufactured at the national level through a national contract, and you can add Oregon National Guard banners on them, etc. We have a very close relationship with the Oregon Association of Broadcasters in order to get those things played on radio and TV. And they've been extremely good to the Guard in playing them instead of 3 in the morning if they get their member stations. If they do have some advertisement that, for whatever reason, slot didn't get filled, they're very good about putting in those ads. So that's pretty much how we do our outreach. Again, we're a community-based organization. We believe that our best strength is going to be in our communities. As you well know from your active duty experience, that active duty lives behind a gate with a guard on it. And the guard, we live on Main Street. And so we believe that that's our best recruiter is a guardsman. But we also know that you've got to do these other things to compete with the other folks that are out there trying to get these young men and women to do a whole host of different things. Does that answer your question, sir?
Thank you. Yes.
Continuing on, the operation program includes all programs that support operations and maintenance of our facilities. It also includes our counter-drug program, the Air National Guard Administration program, equipment refurbishment program, and telecommunications program. There are several major budgetary issues in the operations program that I will discuss in detail. I might add that the equipment refurbishment program, you'll get a chance to look at that tomorrow when we go up to Camp Whittingham. That's where it's located. And the Bear Base as well.
Representative Wisner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, the distance learning program, will we see that tomorrow?
Madam Chair, Representative Wisner, not necessarily, no. We can. We've got studios that are available. I think there's one at Whittingham, right?
I want to look into
them. And we can show you the studios. It's primarily used on weekend drills. We pipe in classes from Little Rock, Arkansas, where's the National Guard's big schoolhouse. We pipe in classes from Fort Benning. And we also offer to communities, which I probably will say here later in this testimony, for a recovery of our cost fees, and that's it. And we've got 7 or 8 locations throughout the state. One of them is in your hometown, and we use that quite a little bit for meetings. Even though we've got aircraft and all kinds of little toys to get from point A to point B, I think it's very valuable with you with respect to meeting with people and getting them eyeball to eyeball. So.
Thank you. Madam Chair and myself are on the education committee, so we might, and they're talking about a lot of distance learning, so we might want to see how you're doing.
Madam Chair, Representative Wisner, we have tried to do outreach primarily to businesses and education folks. We actually taught some classes out of Eastern Oregon University in the Grand in our new facility there, and then we put the interaction in our classroom here in Salem. And I think we did it at Riley as well, Camp Riley in Warrenton. So we had 3 different classrooms under one instructor under a program through Eastern Oregon University. And it was we struggled initially, but we really finally got the bugs out of it, and it worked pretty well.
Thank you.
The Army National Guard Facilities Operation Maintenance Program operates, maintains, repairs, and modifies existing Oregon Army National Guard facilities to meet our administrative and training requirements. Real property operations and maintenance, logistical facilities, armories, training facilities, security and ranges, and training land program are combined and managed under this program. Army National Guard Construction Program manages the design and construction of all Oregon Army National Guard major construction projects. These projects include new facilities as well as facility additions and rehabilitations. The Army National Guard Environmental Program ensures the Army National Guard portion of our agency complies with all federal, state, and local environmental regulations. The Counter-Drug Program is part of the federal government's war on drugs and has been an integral part of the state's drug interdiction and reduction efforts for the past several biennia. The program uses Oregon National Guard members to operate National Guard equipment allocated for drug surveillance and eradication. The National Guard members work with city, county, state, and federal law enforcement agencies under an approved plan by the governor. We don't supplant law enforcement, we support them. The Air National Guard Administrative Program provides command and administrative support for the all Oregon Air National Guard programs. The program includes one state clerical position and six uniformed federal employees that work at our Air National Guard headquarters here in Salem. The Air National Guard Civil Engineering Program provides facility operation and maintenance for the Portland Air Base, Kingsley Field, and the Air National Guard facilities located at Camp Riley. Goes next to Warrenton. The program includes 53 state positions reimbursed by the federal government. Positions require a match from 15% to 25% depending on the unit's mission. The Air National Guard Security Program provides security police protection at the Portland Air National Guard Base in Kingsley Field in Klamath Falls. Security personnel protect aircraft and facilities against sabotage, theft, vandalism, and trespass. The program includes 29 state positions, which are 100% federally reimbursed. The Air National Guard Fire Protection Program, which I mentioned earlier, provides fire protection at the Portland Air Base in Kingsley Field. Personnel are trained to contain aircraft fires, perform aircrew extraction, and provide structural firefighting protection. We provide the only crash, rescue, and fire protection for Klamath Falls Airport. The program includes 43 state positions, which are 100% federally reimbursed. These two fire departments also have mutual aid agreements with both the Port of Portland and the City of Klamath Falls. And occasionally they go off the base to support those elements. The Air National Guard Environmental Protection manages environmental issues. The program monitors and ensures environmental compliance at the Portland Air Base in Kingsley Field and the Air National Guard facility at Camp Rylea. This program includes two state positions reimbursed by the federal government. These positions require a 15% and 20% match, respectively, of the state. The Air National Guard Family Program Support Program provides a support network and systems for military families. Coordination of resources and volunteers who make themselves available to families of airmen is a key ingredient to effective and prepared military unit. This program is 100% federally funded. The base budget provides federal funds limitations for two positions, one at each of our air bases. I might add that in the Army Guard, we have one position that's full-time funded, federally funded, for the Army Guard. Since the deployments, we've been added temporary positions, federal contract positions, I believe up to four right now for family support programs. The Kingsley Field Billeting Program provides lodging to Oregon Guard members, F-15 fire pilot students, and flight medicine students receiving training at Kingsley Field. The program also includes two state positions, which are 100% federally funded. The Electronic Security System Program installs and maintains our weapons vault security systems throughout the state and all of our armories. National Guard Bureau requires all facilities designated for storage of small arms or ammunition to be protected with electronic security systems. The program includes two state positions, which are 100% federally reimbursed. The Equipment Refurbishment Program repairs equipment for distribution throughout the Army supply system. The Army designated our combined maintenance shop at Camp Wilicum as a readiness sustainment maintenance site for the repair of excess unserviceable electronic power generation and support equipment. The equipment is repaired and then distributed to fill critical shortages in the Army supply system worldwide. This program includes 92 state positions, which are 100% federally reimbursed. The next program is the Operations Program and the Telecommunications Program. Telecommunications program provides 100% federal funding for Oregon Army National Guard telecommunications systems procurement, maintenance, and monthly charges. The state only pays for a small number of cell phones and pagers, primarily at the headquarters. The federal government pays all other telecommunication costs for the Oregon Guard. The last program is in this category is the Distributed Training Technology Program. The Distributed Training Technology Program, or distance learning, as we like to call it, is a nationwide National Guard program providing soldiers and their communities access to video teleconferencing, video programming, computer-based training, web-based training, interactive audio, interactive video, electronic mail, and electronic network systems. There are 7 distance learning classrooms located in Oregon. They're located in armories at Tigard, Eugene, Warrenton, Bend, LeGrand, Ashland, and Monmouth. The facilities provide necessary training resources for soldier readiness. The sites are also available for rental fee to recover our base costs to government agencies and the public. The program is 100% federally funded through National Guard Bureau Federal State Cooperative Agreements and the federal program income generated through the video teleconferencing fees. These funds may only be used to support the program. Our base budget provides federal funds limitations for 2 positions and service and supplies. Next chart is our community support programs. The community support programs include 2 highly successful youth programs and our emergency operations system. The acronym STARBASE stands for Science and Technology Academy Reinforcing Basic Aviation and Space Exploration. STARBASE is designed to increase at-risk 3rd through 8th grade students' awareness of and importance of math and science in today's high-technology work environment. This program involves a series of classes taught for the Portland Public School District at the Jackson Armory, located on our airbase, and for the Klamath County School District at Kingsley Field. The teachers are contracted through each one of these districts with federal funds. The goal of the program is to motivate at-risk students to pursue math and science education. I might add that Title I schools are the target, and predominantly that's who attends these classes. The curriculum demonstrates math and science applications in aerospace operations. In many instances, this is the first opportunity a student may have to relate the application of math and science to a practical, result-oriented process. Students tour the airbase and study high-technology aircraft and associated support equipment. They observe flight operations, weather reporting and forecasting operations, and tour aircraft electronics maintenance facilities and firefighting facilities. National Guard members demonstrate the applicability of the math and science to the activities observed by the students during the tours. This program is 100% federally funded. And I might also say that we, our Guard members also work as assistant instructors in different courses, different classes, and help mentor these young folks.
How long has this program been operating?
This program was initiated, I believe, in 1993 or 94. I can't remember the exact date, but it's right in that period. So we've been at it about a decade.
And the students are in, what is the earliest grade they start out?
4th grade, I believe it is. Yeah, 4th grade through 8th grade.
So we've had about 12 years of experience now with the program. With what results in terms of the numbers of students who are demonstrating that they're interested in the associated fields?
Madam Chair, I can give you some anecdotal evidence. I don't have statistics to validate anything here today with me. I can get them, and I will.
Thank you.
We'll get back to you on Tuesday with that information. Anecdotally, and again, the teachers that we employ in this program are the school districts provide them. They select the teachers. And the curriculum is a combination of what national evidence has shown and what the local school district elects or wants to teach. From what I've gotten back from the teachers in conversations over the past decade, they're very excited about continuing the program because they see lights come on all the time in young students who never got the application, the real application of what math and science does. And this is an opportunity to do that. And our tour at the airbase, we may want to sneak over and take a look at that classroom. I think you'll be pleased to see that we've been able to provide the newest and latest equipment, computer equipment, And again, these children come one day in a four or five weeks, one day a week. And we also pay the school district to bus them to the airbase. So the school district has zero costs. And they tell me, the teachers do, that this thing is amazing what the kids do after they return back to their normal classroom and how they look at math and science differently than they had previously. So I think it's more of a hands-on application. Certainly that's one of the, for those of us that have watched education throughout the past several decades, I think that's one of the great lessons that we probably have learned, is if you can apply school, the classroom, to the practical application, then you see more progress and a better learning environment. At least that's the basis that this is taught on.
If there's an opportunity to take a closer look at the program while we're out tomorrow, that would be great. I would enjoy that opportunity.
I can't guarantee there'll be students there. I don't know what the class schedule is. I don't manage this program, so I don't know exactly when the kids are there and when they're not. But
again, the opportunity to better understand what kinds of outcomes are being achieved would also be very helpful.
Yes, ma'am.
And thank you for your explanation.
Yes, ma'am. We also are extremely proud of our Youth Challenge program located 9 miles east of Bend. The program offers at-risk high school dropouts 16 to 18 years old an opportunity to build their future. The program consists of two phases. The first phase is a 22-week residential program at our Central Oregon Training and Education Facility near Bend. Students learn self-discipline, leadership, responsibility, and work skills that enable them to be successful in society. Students have the opportunity to complete educational credit with the goal of reintegrating them into their high school to earn a diploma or, at their selection, to pass the general education development examination, which is administered prior to departing the program through the community college. Second,
Madam Chair.
Representative, what's that?
I know for a fact, and I'm not sure on the star base, but Colonel Caldwell's been a leader in this program. I've had the honor of attending three or four graduations, and the chair, I'm sure, would be moved by this program that's put on. The last class started about 150 kids that dropped out. And they graduated they had 125 that completed the course. Now that means they got 8 high school credits or a GED or they graduated from high school. And it's amazing the ability for these kids to, the discipline, responsibility, and the leadership that they exhibit during the graduation. You would really be proud of it. It's a great program, and as far as outcome measurement, 150 at dropout kids, and you get 125 of those 150 to accomplish that is an outstanding outcome.
I would agree. When we hear about that kind of success, it just leads me to say that's, again, where we need to be making more of an investment. If we're seeing that kind of success, let's do more of it.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hannon.
I just might add to this piece. I have a cousin, a much younger cousin, who left high school prematurely, didn't graduate, got in a bunch of trouble, and his dad, having come from a military background, encouraged him into this program with somewhat of a tough love type process. This young man went into the program as a very troubled youth, not only completed the program, graduated from high school, went on to enlist in the Army, and is currently deployed. Is married, has a couple of children, and is just a great young person. And I think it was this program and some of their disciplinary and teaching techniques that somehow got his full and upright attention. And it's an amazing transformation.
Thank you for sharing that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I can probably talk all day on this program, but we started the program basically on a wing and a prayer, and through a lot of hard work from a lot of different people, it's been able to be recognized in the last 4 years. Two out of the last 4 years, we were recognized as the best program in the nation out of the 29 programs that are out there. All of our kids, they come from all 36 counties. All of these kids are dropped out or will be dropped out, scheduled to be dropped out. We've, as was indicated by the good representative from the Central Oregon, about 25 to 30% of the kids don't get past the first 2 weeks. The first 2 weeks are regimented very strictly under a boot camp model. After that, it's a high school. It's your basic high school under our terms, which are extremely strict. And so we change behaviors, and we give kids an opportunity to be successful. And if the ones that take that opportunity clearly are successful based on the information that we're able to maintain or able to gather after they depart. As I said earlier, you have a 22-week program, and then we have a 12-month non-residential program that continually, and this program is designed to connect these young men and women with a mentor from their community who continues to try to keep them on path on their life skill program that they build while they're in our organization. That is a central piece of this program, is having that mentor. Without the mentor, we know that they don't do as well. With the mentor, an adult mentor, typically, hopefully not a family member, but somebody who has an interest in that student or in that child, these kids do extremely well. And that doesn't mean that some of them don't backslide, but typically even the ones that do, if the mentors who we train and we screen, if they stay with that child, I will guarantee you that child will be successful. Out of the over 3,000 kids, I think it's roughly 3,000. I'm working off, not off notes, but off the top of my head now, but out of these 3,000 kids that have graduated, I can tell you that it's less than a dozen have ended up in a hard bed facility in this state. Now, I don't know that some of them haven't done that outside the state, but the rate of success of putting people on track and getting them motivated and getting them onto something bigger and better is certainly a very, very high rate.
And this program goes back how many years, Colonel?
Madam Chair, we started the program in 1994. We started the program. The story, if you've got a moment, I'll digress and give you this story. But we had an opportunity to apply for a Starbase program, a Youth Challenge program, or at the time they had, the Guard Bureau offered a Youth Conservation Corps program, which was a six-week summer program. The Adjutant General at the time decided to go for the Starbase program because of obvious risk. When you put boys and girls of 16 to 18 years old in a facility, I mean, that creates a whole set of new environments 24/7 that he was not willing to take on that risk. As chance would have it, a couple of the states that had the Youth Conservation Corps program in there had asked for it and received it, couldn't execute. They couldn't put their programs together. The gentleman who was running it from the National Guard Bureau was a close personal friend of mine, and we happened to be having lunch one day at the Pentagon, and he said, "Boy, I'm in trouble. I've got to do something with this money because I'm going to get beat up by Congress if I don't get some programs going." I said, "Well," and I knew we'd just received this facility in Bend, didn't know what to do with it. The community wanted something done. They were beating us up pretty good. And I said, "I've got an idea. How about if we just take that money?" And he said, "Great, if you can execute before September 1st, he says, "you get the money." And so I came home and we put together a plan and we started it up. And it was supposed to be 6 weeks. And as it turned out, two states didn't do it. Then he called me up about a week later and said, "I got another state that didn't do it." And then about a month later, he said, "I got another state." And I said, "I'll take it all." And frankly, we were building this bike while we rode it. It took us about 6 years to get it authorized as a full challenge program. And it's been, I think it's served a lot of young men and women in this state very well. And we've got a lot of people that come back and tell us that. Parents, students, former students. We're very proud of it. And it's difficult. It's a difficult thing to run. It's extremely hard to do. And we've got some very dedicated people that put their heart and soul into making it work.
Is that history documented somewhere?
Yes, ma'am. We have a historical
Herbie Johnny.
I would love to see that.
We'll get that
if
for you.
If you have any video footage that
yes, ma'am.
Also tells that story,
ma'am.
We'd love to see that as well.
I can provide that. That.
Thank you. It's good to maybe talk about some successes of our young people. Yeah, they put each class puts their own tape out, but I think what's interesting in their curriculum, and maybe I don't know how we can use it in K-12, but in their curriculum, they have to perform public service, and they have to go help either seniors or people in need. And also, I think it's interesting, they have to, I don't know how many days it is, they carry a baby around and have to change the baby and feed the baby.
About this, yes.
And learning what responsibilities are with having a baby at a young age. They, you know, so many times you have to change a diaper or feed it or whatever. The baby, not a real baby.
It's a bionic baby. We have an electronic bionic computerized baby that every student has to deal with during their 22 weeks at our program. And that's 24/7. And you really get some interesting responses after in the entire platoons, not just the individual that has the responsibility, but we force them to get a partner. We separate them. They don't stay in the same bays at night, but they, and so if you've got the baby, then you pick somebody to help you out. And when the baby wakes up at 2 a.m., and it actually wets itself, it cries, it goes, and they have to deal with that. And it becomes a rather interesting feedback after that phase. They certainly, these young men and women have a different perspective on what leads up to that baby, I can tell you.
Colonel, what I'd like to do here, just doing a little time check, if you could walk us through the next piece, which is emergency operations.
Yes, ma'am, I will
do
that. I just might add that in the testimony you have before you is that these classes do, on average, 12,875 hours of community volunteer service to the local community over in the Central Oregon area. They would do everything from Parks and Recreation, Forest Service, BLM, any service organization that needs some assistance, Habitat for Humanity, you name it. These young men and women have plowed thousands of hours in each class. They do this. Mm-hmm. Part of the responsibility.
What I'd like to do is if you could take us through emergency operations in the next 5 minutes or less, or do you need more time to do that? Because I'd like to shift and do the governor's recommended budget before we lose Mr. Upadhyaya, because he will not be able to be with us on Monday. Is that correct?
Right, Madam Chair.
And so if we could...
The Emergency Operations Program supports the coordination of critical manpower and equipment resources for emergencies in Oregon when called upon by the Governor or the Commander-in-Chief. Responding to state emergencies is part of our core mission and places our soldiers and airmen on state active duty when ordered to by the Governor. I would say that the Emergency Ops Program in the state of Oregon has developed into a very significant aspect of our overall mission. By virtue of the construction of the Anderson Readiness Center on State Street, we were able to, thanks to the legislature authorizing that, we were able to combine the Office of Homeland Security, Emergency Management, Oregon State Police, Oregon Department, or Highway Department, or Oregon Department of Transportation, and also we have a partnership in there with the Law Enforcement Data System, and also the prison system also has a piece of that facility. So by combining the efforts of all these different agencies, we've been able to put the core responders to any state emergency in one place at one time in a facility that can operate state's emergencies without having to relocate, without having to work around different problems, and also have the facility that's designed for that action, as opposed to ad hoc-ing other facilities. We have state-of-the-art computer systems, state-of-the-art wiring, and in the event of an emergency, and if we haven't seen our Anderson Readiness Center, I would really love to take you out and show you that facility. We can bring in any FEMA vans or any other military vans, pull them right into the drill facility, and in the floor we've established hookups, so you can bring these mobile vans in, drop the leads, the drops, plug them in, and they're immediately involved, immediately networked with all emergency operations within the Office of Emergency Management and our office. Our Military Support Civil Authority is also co-located with the Office of Homeland Security, and we basically have a door between us where we can cooperate and work together with those offices on a continual basis, not only for Homeland Security, but also during an emergency. So presently, as you said, we've got 39 armories. Have we shown the armory chart yet?
No.
We'll get to that real quick if we're going to dance around here, and I'll show you our facilities. 23. Back.
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 19, page 19.
Right there. This is a good depiction of the Oregon National Guard facilities. This is essential. Not only our locations are designed for a multitude of different reasons, but if you look at any emergency in the state of Oregon, most major cities within the state of Oregon, we have an armory, we have a unit, we have communication capability, we have a place for people to come in the case of a disaster. As you can see on the chart, the red stars indicate training areas, major training areas. The green dots represent Army units, and the blue stars, or the yellow star circled with blue, are the Air National Guard units. And we have everything. We literally cover the state of Oregon, except, of course, maybe Jordan Valley and Rome. We're a little bit sparse out in that area, but so is everybody else, so we think that's doable. And as you can see, it provides us a great network of capability to communicate, operate, and deal with any state emergency, regardless of the multitude of it.
Let's stop here, Colonel, and I know that we're going to want to come back to the emergency preparedness, the emergency operations arena. We have a resident expert, that's how I refer to him, on this committee that's Representative Wisnot. And I'm looking to him to lead us through some other questioning when we get to the Homeland Security Department. But we want to have the best possible understanding of where the links are, where the collaboration is taking place between the different agencies that have a responsibility for building the Homeland Security network, if you will. So if we could shift for now and go to the governor's side of the picture. And if I have mispronounced your name, I do apologize. I know you're going to say it for me on the record, and I'll listen very carefully to get it right.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, this is Satish Upadhyay with the Department of Administrative Services, and I will be providing you with an overview of the Governor's recommended budget. Thank you for letting me do my presentation today. On Monday, I have two budget hearings scheduled at the same time, so this year helps. So if you will refer to my presentation document, it's a document like this. The first chart, if you turn to page 2, the charts on page 2, I'm sure you've seen it a number of times. These charts show you the governor's recommended budget for the entire public safety program area, excluding the judicial branch, and this is $2.4 billion of total funds. The military department's budget is $94.6 million of total funds, which is about 4% of the program's budget. This program has $1.6 billion of general fund, and the military department budget, its share is about a little over 1% with $16.8 million of general fund dollars. Moving along to page 3, the military department's functions to support national defense under the direction of the president and to protect the life and property in the state during natural disasters and civil unrest, it supports two of the governor's budget principles, and these are the principles relating to public safety as well as education and workforce development. Moving along to page 4, the pie chart on page 4, it shows you the various fund types that make up this agency's budget. The recommended budget consists of $94.6 million total funds, and about 74% of the budget is federal funds. As you heard from the agency, federal funds pay for wages and salaries of federal employees assigned to the Oregon National Guard duties, and also they provide construction funds and provide funding for at-risk youth programs, the Starbase, as well as the Youth Challenge programs. 18% of the budget consists of general fund, And general fund dollars are mainly used to pay salaries and wages of state employees, and they're also used as state matching dollars for the federal funds. For example, the Portland Air Base, it requires a 20% state match for the federal dollars, and the Klamath Air Base, it requires 15% of a state match, and there's a 25% state match required at the Camp Ryalea Air Station. And there are other facilities that require 0 to 50% of state match. The other fund dollars, which make up about 8% of the budget, these are mainly from the armory rental revenues, as well as the certificate of participation that the state issues for construction projects. Moving along to page 5, the chart on page 5 shows you the various program units that make up this agency's budget. There are basically four program units, and Colonel Caldwell, he talked about each program unit, the administration program that basically provides leadership to the agency. The largest, 77% of the budget is for the operations program, and it is under this program where the two national Air National Guard bases fall, as well as all the facilities. The community support program, which consists of the Youth Challenge program as well as the Star Base program, it's about 7% of the budget. And there's a capital construction program for building all the facilities that the agency has. It's about 10% of the budget. Moving along to page 6. These show the chart here shows the various budget categories. About 50% of the budget is for personal services. This is gross employee compensation. 38% of the budget is for services and supplies. These are routine expenses needed to run an agency. 11% of the budget is for capital outlay, and this is mainly for the capital construction projects. And there's a little less than 1% for special payments. This is basically, it's a payment for another state agency for some loans that the agency received.
Madam Chair.
Representative, let's
see if I can try this. Mr. Upadhyay?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. The services and supply, is that most of that bulk through with the federal money and through the defense acquisition reg system, or how much is, you know, we talk in the package that Mr. Jordan gave us, it talked about smart buying, the savings from that. So how much is that of the supplies and services are bought with federal money versus local? And I guess the federal money or federal supplies and services have to be bought in accordance with defense acquisition regs, or if that's the question.
Madam Chair, Representative President, the services and supplies budget, if you look at it, involves both federal dollars as well as the smart as the state dollars. And if we look into the budget documents, look at the agency request budget, let's just look at the allocation here. I found it. The agency's total services and supplies dollars are $35.9 million. And $7.6 million is general fund, $1.6 million is other funds, and there's $26.7 million of federal funds. So basically a major chunk is federal funds.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Wisnant, a matter of clarification, the total budget, there's a good deal of our budget, our $419 million, is not in this budget that we spent.
And this is only the...
And this is the portion that is directly related to facilities and the matches and those items that we talked about earlier. The remainder of that is administered not by my office, but by each command through the United States Property and Fiscal Officer. And that would be directly under federal rules. No state rules apply there.
Okay, follow up, Madam Chair.
Certainly.
Thank you. So if I read my outline from the Mrs. Jordan, is the federal government doesn't buy the facilities, the state has to buy the facilities. Is that correct? But then we can, do we use state money or federal money for the maintenance, upkeep, utilities of the buildings if they're state-owned?
Madam,
gets the complicated. I really don't want to know.
Madam Chair, and Representative Wisnant, and that's the... I guess in fear of confusing you beyond any recognition here, some facilities require state matches. Some don't. So some of them are 100% federal, and some of them are state match facilities. The rule of thumb is an armory is a state facility, and only on certain items like major repair items like furnaces, big dollar items can you use federal money. The rest of the normal maintenance is a state responsibility. On the air bases,
capital repairs are federal.
Capital repairs generally are federal. Not all of them, but generally. And to construct an armory, you have to have 25% state matching dollars to construct it. To maintain it, it's 100% state maintenance on it, unless, of course, you get into, like I said, a major end item like a furnace, a major repair, and here we can usually, typically, depending on the level of federal money and the rules of that particular fiscal year, we can get 50% state money to repair those and replace those. If you want to replace a window, it's 100% state. If you go to the airbase, if you go to Portland, it's a 20% match for the upkeep, 100% construction at the airbase, federal. If you go to Klamath Falls, which is a training base, then it's only 15% state match to operate that one. And if you go to a training area like VAC in Central Oregon outside of Redmond, that is 100% federal reimbursement, typically reimbursement. We spend the money, they reimburse us. And then we operate those facilities. So there is a wild matrix of fund matches, and nothing is simple. It takes a skilled staff to understand, you know, which project can be federally reimbursed, partially, totally, or not at all. And so that's what we do. We look at our facilities differently in each category because of those requirements. But the majority of our budget, the $90 million we're talking about in this budget, is outside of the, or it's a total of the 419, but the feds then spend another 300 and some million in this state for the operation of the Oregon Guard. It never comes across this desk.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Please continue.
So, Madam Chair and members of the committee, if we can move on to page 7, if you don't have any questions on the other one. Now, the table on page 7 shows you the agency's budget across various biennia. The governor's recommended budget, of course, is $94.6 million of total funds. This is, if we compare it to 2003-2005, it's a decrease of 13.3%. And let's look at the fund types. The general fund is a 27.4% increase. And the main reason for the general fund increase is because the emergency board at its June 2004 meeting allowed endorsed the military department taking over the Oregon Youth Facility in Ochico. So these are lease payments to the Department of Administrative Services. It's a $1.37 million general fund increase because of that. And there are also increases in general fund due to increase in debt service payments. The emergency board did approve some capital construction projects which were financed through certificate of participation, and these require debt service payments. So those were the main reasons for the increase in the general fund. Besides, also there's of course a very important package, the governor's National Guard appreciation package that provides $700,000 of general fund, and I will be talking more about it in a few minutes.
Representative Hanna.
Madam Chair, thank you. The increase in general fund dollars to a great degree is the payment on the OYA facilities?
Madam Chair, Representative Hammond, that is one component for the increase in the general fund, because there is $1.37 million for 2005-2007. The payment for the OYA facility in Ochico is $1.37 million of general fund. And besides that, there is a $459,000 general fund payment for debt service for the certificate of participation issued for the Salem Armory Aviation Supply Shop and the Lane County Armed Forces Reserve Center.
Thank you. Follow-up, Madam Chair?
Sure.
Madam Chair, this is one of those instances where it seems as though we spent a fair amount of time with OIA to vet this issue out. And their answer on this was probably true, that they had leased it to the military department. But in reality, we're paying back for it through general fund payments, if I understand this correctly. And it's, I guess it's a little troubling to say that we spent a fair amount of time trying to understand how that worked, and we ask a lot of questions around it. And here we are back finding out it's not a federally... We didn't replace the money with federal rent dollars. We're still paying for it in general fund expenditures. Thank you.
Did you wish to comment?
No, Madam Chair. I think he's accurate. All right. Although I would comment that the agency has stated to me that there, sometime in the future, there is some hope that they would be able to purchase the facility using federal funds, which would then repay the general funds that they are using now to lease that facility. So but that's off in the future. It's a hope, not a reality.
Colonel?
Madam Chair, in following on with what your expert staff just commented on, that's exactly what we had proposed. The federal government has a what is termed as a Department of Defense has a future year defense plan that they look at all facilities under. The we, as we get into our facilities in more detail, you'll see the overall condition of them is rather poor because most of them were purchased or built after World War II. So their design life is reached its end, and so that unfortunately they're all coming due some, you know, at once. Needless to say, there isn't enough federal money out there to do everything that needs to be done with respect to the Guard nationwide. So we propose each year, we propose a plan to the federal government, to the National Guard Bureau, that includes which facilities we would like to rebuild. And most of those are 75-25, 75 Fed, 25 State. The reason that we wanted to maintain the lease with OYA as opposed to ownership, because if we owned it, then why would the federal government want to buy it again? And so we preferred the lease to put us in a contractual arrangement so we can submit this request to the federal government and hopefully that at some point we can get it in this future year defense plan. We did not get it in this year. It fell below the line of needs, and we're hoping to get it in there so we can get the federal government to do exactly what Ms. Jordan said, which is to come in with a purchase, if you will, and then refund back the COP debt. That is the plan. So, but it isn't today. You're absolutely correct in how you've associated it today.
Thank you, Representative Hanna.
Please continue.
Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, the main thing I think to see and get on this table is that there's a decrease in the 2005-2007 budget compared to 2003-2005 as a result of decrease in federal funds. There is around a 21% decrease in the federal funds. Moving along to page 8, the major policy issues that we faced when developing the governor's budget. The governor's budget, it recognizes the importance of this agency in the local, national, as well as in the international arena in today's environment. It funds all existing services and also establishes a National Guard appreciation package with $700,000 of general fund. The appreciation package, the way it's supposed to be used is for servicemen's group life insurance fund, to provide tuition waiver, as well as to provide fishing and hunting licenses. Besides that, it continues the Youth Challenge program at the 2003-2005 level. It enhances funding for facilities operations and maintenance at the Portland and Kingsley Air National Guard bases. Again, these air bases require matching state dollars. As a result, there's an enhancement of around $218,000 of general fund to meet the additional federal funds that are coming in. It also provides state support for the newly built or acquired facilities, including the Baker City and Central Oregon Readiness Center and the Lane County Field Maintenance Shop. It adds 15.33 full-time equivalent positions and reclassifies 7 positions in the operations and community support programs. And there are 5 capital construction projects approved. These are all funded with other funds and federal funds. And the budget has $5 million of federal funds to support, maintain, and restore facilities and weapon ranges. Moving along to the last page.
Madam Chair.
Representative
Lesnar. Just because we're going to be working in detail on the budget, and I forgot to bring my co-chair's budget, but the governor although he gave $700,000 for the appreciation package, he took away $113,000 to eliminate the tuition assistance program. Is that correct? And my question, I guess, is that correct? And did the Guard have any recommendations to the governor? And then the next one is that, Madam Chair, and I'm not sure again what the co-chairs did, but the Youth Challenge Program, which we've talked about and we're proud about, and it's obviously got success, was funded with money from the gang intervention money. And I hate to put the two against each other, and I don't remember what the co-chairs did on that. If they put the gang intervention money back or how.
Madam Chair, Representative Wistat, the co-chair's budget doesn't change the governor's recommended budget as it relates to the Youth Challenge Program or moving that gang intervention money back. There was no backfilling of that. The co-chair's budget did, however, does add $5 million for National Guard appreciation, not $700,000. And that hasn't been determined yet how they will allocate those money.
Both co-chairs,
yes.
And the other question I had then, Madam Chair, to the Guard was, did the Guard have any input to the governor as far as the tuition assistance is that?
Madam Chair, Representative Wisnant, we did. One of the phenomenons that has occurred in the last, since 2001, has been that the federal government has stepped up dramatically with respect to tuition assistance funding. We didn't believe, we have in statutory language a 90% tuition waiver that was authorized back in 93, 95, and that was fully funded finally in 99, and then in 2001, 2003, it was funded again, but we had to give it all back after the multiple sessions and the bad economy. About simultaneously, the federal government stepped up and said, we're going to produce more opportunity for education benefits for guardsmen. So we believe when we submitted the budget that it would be repetitive and that we would be sitting on money that, frankly, we didn't need to spend when we could move everybody to the federal side of the house. So we said we didn't want to see that money funded in there. We didn't see the need.
Okay.
So that's where we're at. I think, as Satish has indicated, the governor is looking at two things with respect to tuition money in this appreciation package. One of those that is a big interest amongst our guardsmen is not just the members of the Guard, but their families, particularly their spouses and their children. We haven't really worked out all the details on that yet, depending on how far will that money go and how much will be allocated, depending on what's going on in other parts of the building with respect to several bills that are up to do different things with respect to hunting and fishing and tuition assistance. And there's just, as you well know probably, there's a long list of bills that are associated with the Guard and Reserve right now. So
thank you. That's good to know that, Madam Chair.
So, Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, on to the last page, there are a number of technical adjustments. Under the operations program, the agency has identified some new needs. So the 15.33 positions that you see added include some additions that are to the governor's printed budget. So we are adding, this is technical adjustment in package 110, which would add one position and also would reclassify two positions. And in package 220, there would be addition of two natural resource specialists, four positions, one trade maintenance supervisor position, and also converting three half-time seasonal labor one positions into permanent positions. There's another technical adjustment in the community support program. This is basically to rectify an error when we did the budget. This is to establish a position in package 403, which we established in the governor's printed budget as a limited position, to establish it as a permanent position. And lastly, in the capital construction program, there's a revenue adjustment. The agency has requested that the revenues are kind of inflated, so they would like a reduction of about $1.4 million of revenues reduced. If you have any questions?
Questions or comments, Representative Hanson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. What's the program area that the natural resource specialist will be involved in?
Madam Chair, Representative Hanson, that would be under the operations program. And maybe Mike would like to shed some more light on that.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, currently our environmental operations are split between Army and Air. I think these positions are Army positions, right? And our environmental office works under our installations division, and they include the map you saw earlier, everything that was green or with a red on it, our training bases, and all of our armories. That's what these people do, is make sure that we comply with all state and federal regulatory guidance concerning our operations. As you might imagine, when we're in a training area of several hundred thousand acres, like in Central Oregon or over in Boardman, and we want to do something, we have to get approvals. You have to go through the NEPA Act and other state regulatory requirements. We simply just can't go out and train and do what we may choose to do. As a sideline to this, the arrangement we have with the BLM on this ground in representing Wisnot's district is that we're one of their preferred users. We've been involved with them now for about 25 years, and they have taken to wanting us to move out of our areas and go to other areas. They're wanting to expand our use because part of this environmental group's job is to make sure that we treat the ground properly and treat the environment properly. So what's occurred because of our rehabilitation after we use an area, so we use an area 1 year, we rehab it, and then we go to another area, is that they've seen a huge growth in native species coming back into those areas and reestablishing themselves. So they think that's such a wonderful idea. They said, we've got several hundred thousand acres we'd like you to look at, and which is a great idea, but it's very difficult for us to do what they would love us to do. But it's been a very good mutual relationship, and that's mainly due to this branch being able to understand those requirements and make sure that we comply by them.
Colonel, would you like to give us a preview of what we will be seeing and doing tomorrow?
Yes, ma'am. I'd love to do that. As you know, we're going to depart here from our Army Aviation Support Facility on Airport Road. We'll take a UH-60 Black Hawk helicopter, which is a full-weather aircraft. And I might also just explain a little bit about this particular model of helicopter. It's the newest model that the Army makes. It's the Cadillac of helicopters in the world. We have 12 of these helicopters assigned here in Salem. The crew will load the helicopter. We'll fly to Camp Withicum. We're going to visit our museum. We're also going to get an opportunity to visit the combined maintenance shop that has our refurbishment program that I spoke to earlier in the meeting. You'll get an opportunity to see what equipment looks like when it comes into us from the Army, and you'll get to see what it looks like when it leaves after being rebuilt and refurbished. This program is the number one program in the country, the five that are in operation. I think it's five. We have the best record. We produce the most and the best out of Camp Withicum, Oregon. Then we're going to depart Camp Withicum after we see the facilities there, and we're going to go to the Portland Air Base. Portland Air Base, you'll get a briefing on what the Air National Guard, what their mission is there and what they do. You get an opportunity to look at F-15 jets. And then, if time allows, we want to get over to the Jackson Armory, which is adjacent, sits on the Portland Air Base, and take a look at a post-World War II facility, so you can kind of understand a little bit of what we deal with facility-wise. And you'll also get a look at the Starbase program and the classroom that we converted and carved out space for that program. And by then, I suspect we'll be out of time, and we'll probably just have to get on the helicopter and come home. Or in your case, I guess you can have somebody pick you up there, can't you?
Representative Hanna?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is, I think, on same target, but going a different direction. Are your folks also the ones who will be taking the group to Roseburg and Medford?
Madam Chair, Representative Hanna, that is correct. The Veterans House Veterans Committee went out last week, looked at Camp Riley in Portland, had hearings in both places. Tomorrow they're leaving for Roseburg, Ashland, and then from Ashland on Saturday over to Kingsley Field, have another hearing, then we'll come home. I might also suggest that if the committee's interested, I'm taking a helicopter to Youth Challenge next Thursday. We're planning on leaving, and some of the Veterans Committee is going along. We're planning on leaving around noon, and we're going to fly over to Youth Challenge, see the kids, see the program, spend about 2 to 2.5 hours at the program, maybe 3, and then we'll get on the helicopter and come home and be back by 4:30, 5 o'clock.
Madam Chair, just as a follow-up,
yes.
I will be going the other direction from you all since I'm going to Roseburg and the Veterans Committee is having a hearing in Roseburg.
Great.
And then I'm also going with them on to Medford, though I'm going to do the Ways and Means meeting that night, not the Veterans.
So what's our time on this, Colonel?
Tomorrow?
Yeah.
What is
8:30
show up time, depart about 8:45, takes about... The weather is like it is today, about a 30-minute flight into Withicum.
And when will we be back here?
Around 2.
Is it around 2? Okay.
Yeah, 2:30 on the outside.
Okay, but our last stop, because I have to, we have to be at the Ways and Means in Medford.
I'm gonna miss that particular Medford meeting.
Okay, so our last stop before we come back is...
We'll be at Portland Air Base.
So 2 o'clock I can get to the meeting.
Yeah, I'm actually going to fly from their commercial down to Medford to catch up with the other committee. So,
that was our meeting. 7 o'clock. Okay, so as long as we're back here by 2, good. And Madam Chair.
Starting from here at 8:30?
If you want to meet at the kiosk at 8:15, I'll drive us to the base.
Okay.
8:15.
We're not going to have session tomorrow.
You will need to...
Have to be excused.
You will need to get excused from session.
We've done that.
We're not leaving until later.
Okay. Is there other room for staff that we talked about? Is there any staff?
I think that you needed to have let...
Those security numbers and everything.
I don't know the head count right now.
You know the head count? It's 11.
It's 11. We're about maxed out. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yeah, that's trying to count the seats.
I get to check the maintenance record before I get on.
Madam Chair, if it was not, if you want to do that, I can show you the logbook. I'm sure as a former military pilot, you'll understand that. You'll understand it probably better than most.
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, I unfortunately have got a in-district thing that I'll be attending tomorrow, but I had heard the rumors that all the good helicopters were the ones that were sent overseas.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, I would suggest that the 12 helicopters we have remaining are as good as... I would bet you money, marbles, or chalk that our helicopters are far better than anything you'll find on active duty maintenance-wise. And I would bet my paycheck on it. I mean, that's just how we look at things compared to the active duty.
They're betting much more than their paycheck.
Well, Madam Chair, with Jim Hansen, every time I get on one of them, that's...
I'm being facetious.
I know you are.
Taken similar trip to that a session or two back, and the one thing that is always so impressive is the incredible condition that most of your facilities are in. The ones that, other than the ones that have just aged, but like the Portland Air Base facility, I mean, I've ate in a lot of restaurants and cafeterias and stuff that weren't as well maintained and as clean as that facility is where you work on the plane.
Well, Colonel, let me say what I should have said at the beginning of this hearing. It is an honor to have you here before this committee. We honor your service, and we honor the service of all of those who serve with you. And we look forward to tomorrow. Thank you very much for all of the preparations that you have made and will be making. And beyond that, we look forward to the time that we'll be spending on Monday as well.
Well, thank you for taking the time to visit with us and find out what we're doing. That's very important to our 8,000 guardsmen.
Absolutely. And with that, we are...
With that, though, I will leave you this little item here. Pass them around. With the return of all of our soldiers, we've had to learn some new skills and new tricks, and
And one of those is reintegrating them back into the community and giving them opportunities or giving them guidance on how to get different services. So we created this refrigerator magnet. So both family members and soldiers, as they debrief and come out of federal active duty, that sometimes they don't listen real well. So we've given them this to say if something comes up, whether it be post-traumatic stress or job help or whatever, we've established 24/7 operation within our department so they can, them or their family, their kids, their wives, their uncle, their aunts, we don't care, can take that number and call us and say, this soldier needs help. And whatever he needs it on, he or she needs it. So we're producing those. We're sending them out. And please feel free to give them away. If you need more, I'll get more of them.
Thank you very much. Okay. And again, we thank you for your service. We're adjourned.